Coming this Easter Sunday, sacred music for the Easter season. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world. Coming Easter Sunday at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Little story from the Wilkin household. My daughter, who's married and out of the house, had come back to visit a little bit, and she'd brought with her her plane book, just something to read on the plane. One of her friends had recommended that she read the first of a series of books, and the book was called Hunger Games. And I honestly had heard something about it. There was a movie coming out or something like that, but wasn't terribly interested in it. And lo and behold, I discovered after my wife and I talked about it that my son, who's 15, still living at home, right under my own roof, had read all three books, and I was completely unaware of it. He was rather nonchalant in his affirmation that, yeah, I've read those books. I read them years ago, Dad. Well, that shows how far out of the loop I am. Of course, the movie Hunger Games have come out, and it's not only brought it to my attention, but of course, people are starting to talk about the books that inspired this first of the movies, and the story therein, and how they are a compelling read. I wonder, why are these books, the Hunger Games trilogy, so popular? Joining us to talk about the Hunger Games trilogy, Pastor Sam Schultheis. He's associate pastor at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Huntington Beach, California, and author of a recent blog post titled, "Can a Christian Watch or Read Hunger Games?" Sam, welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to be here, Todd.
You say you read these back when they first came out, before they were the sensation that they are today. Why is the first book and this trilogy, why is it so popular among not only the target audience, that would be young adults, but also older folks like you?
Sure. Well, I think, it's one of those kind of the continued series. We've seen a whole progression of different books, you know, ranging from the Harry Potter explosion that, I mean, it's still rampant. People still love to read and reread Harry Potter over and over again. There was the Twilight series that obviously had a very different target audience, but was nonetheless wildly popular and made it to films as well. In a way, you can kind of see the series progression here of different themes that are kind of similar in each of the movies and books. And Hunger Games is no different, really. There's big life issues that are being dealt with in the movie and the books in particular here. War, how do we handle war? How do we live in the midst of a very violent world as the books portray it? What about poverty and oppression, politically and socially? How do people deal and live with death on a daily basis is kind of the reality that the main characters are launched into, not only in their daily life, but also in this, as the story develops, as they're launched into the Hunger Games themselves.
You say that the books suck you in. What do you mean by that?
Oh, it's addictive. I mean, Suzanne Collins is a great writer. That's probably part of the appeal too. Why it's so popular is that she tells a very good story. It catches you from the first chapter, and it just kind of sweeps you along down the river, kind of like getting drug off the shore when you're fishing or something. Before you know it, you're downstream a couple miles, and a couple hours have passed perhaps. But the story is told well. It's paced well, and the action and the plot more so moves you along.
So speaking of the plot, I had someone trying to explain it to me this weekend, and they were having a little difficulty because the sense I get is, if you haven't read the books, it's very difficult to explain the world of these books. There's a bit of a learning curve. So as best as you can, give us the plot of the first, and then we'll talk about the subsequent books as well.
Definitely, yeah. The first book basically is set, and you kind of get pieces of the story and the background as you read on, really throughout all three books, but certainly in the first one as the story begins to unfold. The main character, Katniss Everdeen, is a 16-year-old girl. She lives in this world, this place called Panem, and Panem is basically thrown together shambles of what was once North America, and now it's been divided into 12 districts. There is a 13th that was destroyed 75 years prior to the beginning of the story by the Capitol, and the Capitol is kind of at the center ring of these 12 districts that basically controls everything with an ironclad, highly technological fist. And part of this world is, in order to suppress the rebellion that had happened 75 years prior to the beginning of the story, is that they hold this annual event called the Hunger Games, from which two tributes, they call them, basically ages 13 to 18-year-old children from the districts are launched into this arena, basically a futuristic coliseum, in which they're to fight to the death, and the winner is the last one standing, if they can even do that at the end of the at the end of the rigmarole. But that's kind of the basic layout, at least at the beginning, and Katniss is launched into this rather unexpectedly.
It also, if I'm, I'm given to believe that it starts with her agreeing to go as a substitute for her younger sister, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, her sister had just turned 13. She was of age. The odds were not in her favor, as kind of the story goes, and there's a whole system in the books as to how that works out, who may be more likely to go into the arena or not. Katniss was far more likely to go into, according to the odds, and yet it was her sister who was chosen, ironically, and then she volunteers as a substitute to go in her sister's place.
That kind of raises a question of any unintentional Christian themes or echoes of Christian themes that one might find, at least in the first story.
Oh, definitely. In the first story, I think that one jumped off the page as soon as I read it. Here the sister, Katniss, is going into willing sacrifice and substitution for her sister, Prim, or Primrose. And you can kind of get a picture there of already of some of the things that may develop later in the series, is that sacrifice and love are two big themes there. And I don't know, again, if that was an intentional Christian reference on behalf of Susan Collins or not, but it's certainly there in the story, this this character of sacrifice and love. And usually one leads to the other. You know, Katniss loves her sister, and so she sacrifices herself for her. And later on, great sacrifice will also lead to love in other, or between other characters.
How do the other two books in the series, Catching Fire and Mockingjay, how do they proceed as far as the plot goes?
Right. Well, at the end of, and I won't give any spoilers away for the books or movies if anybody has not watched or read yet, but at the end of the first book, the way that the games progress and develop, it basically leads from the arena, and then outside of the arena, it expands. The story continues outside of the games, and in a way they continue as well, between just, now it's not just Katniss and the games, now it's Katniss, the games, and a brewing rebellion in the second book. And the brewing rebellion leads to an all-out war and chaos of sorts in the third book.
I take it that Collins is playing with something that probably all of us, I mean, if you have even a toe in pop culture, are acutely aware of nowadays, and that is the line that is often blurred, especially in our entertainment world, between entertainment and reality. And I take it that part of the inspiration of the book was her kind of having that strange experience we all get of flipping the channels, and the reality show blurs with the reality of the news. Talk about how she deals with that in the course of these stories.
Oh, precisely. This, in fact, was one of her inspirations for the book itself and the trilogy concept that she developed. Was she was flipping channels one night and was flipping back and forth between the so-called reality TV and some war footage from, I forget where, but somewhere probably over in the Middle East or one of the recent areas of conflict in the last couple of years. So that was one of her inspirations, and it gets very twisted because the capital and the people of Panem are, well, the people in the capital are forced and in fact enjoy to watch these games, which are violent and brutal and dark and rather bleak altogether. And then the people of the rest of the nation are forced as well as part of this, as a reminder not to rebel, as a way of sort of dangling, you know, hope out there, but not really providing any answer for it. So they kind of, the capital intentionally launches its citizens into this annual festivity, knowing that it's not really very festive at all, but this is precisely how they keep control.
What were you thinking? I mean, you can't be completely untouched by the world of reality entertainment. What were you thinking when you were reading these books vis-a-vis how we consume our entertainment nowadays.
Sure. I mean, you can. There's so many of these so-called reality shows, from the Jersey Shores to the Big Brother, even as a name of one, with the cameras and whatnot. They're all over the place, and it seems like part of it is part of the book anyway. Is I guess in many ways a warning of how we like to try and live our lives vicariously through others, perhaps by watching them or maybe having fun at their expense with some of these other comedy kind of reality shows. But it really does speak to kind of the culture where it's all about me, and I'd rather see somebody else suffer than myself, or rather watch somebody else commit violent acts, in the case of the Hunger Games, kind of attraction there, or do other all sorts of, kind of rather crazy things that maybe we would wish to do or couldn't, but now we can view them, from the comfort of our couch.
Pastor Sam Scholheis is our guest. We're talking about the Hunger Games trilogy of books on this Tuesday afternoon, March the 27th. We are coming to you live. I invite your questions or comments. Are you familiar with the Hunger Games, the books? I want to hear from you. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Pastor Sam Scholheis is our guest. He's associate pastor at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Huntington Beach, California, and author of a recent blog post titled, "Can a Christian Watch or Read Hunger Games?" 1-877-623-6943. This break is a great time to call. 877-623-MYIE. You can send us a tweet at IssuesETC or an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the lesser Christian themes in the Hunger Games trilogy with Pastor Sam Scholheis when we come back.
We have some great programs lined up for you during Holy Week, and here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. Holy Week programming. Just go to the support page at IssuesETC.org, download, print, and make copies of the Holy Week bulletin insert. The bulletin insert can be used for the weekend of Palm Sunday, April 1st. IssuesETC.org and click support.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Is Christianity merely one limited half-true perspective on God? Find out in an article I've written for the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled, "The Blind Men and the Elephant," and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Christian Teve's journey from the agnosticism of a committed Darwinist to faith in Jesus Christ. The online Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Sam Scholheis is our guest. We're talking about the Hunger Games trilogy of books. Sam, let's talk about a few of the other Christian themes there. It would be hard to write a novel like this without at least a tacit knowledge or, I guess, kind of framework of the fall into sin. What do you say?
I think you're absolutely correct on that. I mean, one of the parts of the book, or I guess speaking about it as its entirety, you know, one of the things about the book that is pretty prevalent from almost the get-go is that this world that they live in, that Katniss and her family struggle in daily to survive in, her and her friends, and the district in which she lives in is, in particular, it's impoverished and it's oppressed, and people are suffering and starving, and this kind of world is not really not possible without a doctrine of original sin. And so in a way, kind of like Lord of the Flies does, Suzanne Collins, I think, perhaps even unintentionally, illustrates the world as it is, death and decay and depraved people killing each other for sport and entertainment. You know, and if you'll do anything basically to keep the people and keep the peace entertained, well, then that's fine. You know, it's the old Romans had a phrase, panem et circenses, you know, bread and circus, keep the people fed and entertained, and you can get away with anything that you want to, including their own oppressiveness.
Is there anything, it's written toward a young adult audience, and I think that would be, you know, anything from 10 up nowadays. Is there anything in there that, as a pastor, you would be cautious about?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, the main character herself, even, you know, while at the same time she displays some wonderful heroistic, you know, features, and while she sacrifices for her sister and does many other great things, a lot of them are done in the context of this, the Hunger Games, and she's forced to either kill or be killed. And it's much different than the, you know, Jesus' instruction for Christians to turn the other cheek or to seek no revenge against your enemies, these kinds of things. It's a difficult world to live in. So as a result, there are some things in there that you would say, well, these are good books to read, but you ought not to go and, you know, play out your own Hunger Games by yourself kind of thing, or to reflect some of the behavior of the characters in the book even.
So it sounds like this is yet another, and we've talked about other stories with you, probably of greater import in the long line of literature, that build nicely upon what makes for good stories in every case, good against evil, love and sacrifice. It sounds like Hunger Games is right there in that wheelhouse.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really hard to tell a good story without those kind of objective realities, you know, right and wrong, good and evil, a fight, a hero, a villain, and some kind of victory in the end. So, yeah, that's the basis for good stories, because good stories are ultimately based upon a true story, you know, where there is real good and real evil in this world, in reality, and where there is a true victor over sin and death, which is Christ our Lord.
Another thing that you note about Collins in these books is, as you say, she doesn't always answer all the questions and tie things up with a pretty bow. Why is that an advantage here?
I think that there's always an author always tries to do a couple of things. One is to obviously provide a good plot, good story, but you always want to entrap your reader somehow. You know, entice them into reading the story, of course, but also to put themselves in the story in a way. And at the very least, to get them to struggle or wrestle with the content that's being discussed there, even if it is in the course of a rather captivating, engaging storyline and adventure or event. So I think that's the key there, is how does, while Collins does not always answer all our questions, how does she pull us into the story and force us to wrestle with the same kinds of questions that aren't resolved?
Here was my initial reaction when I heard the kind of basic plot line, and that was, I was a little bit surprised. I can understand why something like the Twilight series would be a blockbuster of series of books with kids, because it's essentially a kind of forbidden love story told over and over and over again. And I can understand why C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia would do the same thing, because it's great storytelling, and it is a bit of escapism, along with those of the Lord of the Rings trilogy and all the other comparisons that you can make. But when I first heard the plotline of Hunger Games, I thought, well, writing about a dystopia future where there are battles to the death, wouldn't it would have maybe appeal with,
young men, but not so much with the young women. I would not have predicted that that storyline would catch on. Why do you think it has?
I think part of it is the central character herself is exactly that. She's a girl, and not that that's unusual, except that in, like you mentioned, in most cases, the main hero of a book is a male character, a knight in you know, medieval tales and things like that, and very often, and perhaps less infrequently now, we see, you know, strong female characters. But in literature lately, there's been a great host of them. You know, Hermione in Harry Potter, and you know, the Twilight series has several of them, and you know, Katniss here is definitely a strong heroine in terms of the story and the plot lines. So I think part of that is that that's attractive, not only to young male readers, but to female readers as well. So it's gotten kind of a broad readership and now viewership with the movie, in part because of that.
Do you think it's also, in addition to that, also that, well, to, I mean, kind of put it frankly, kids today are more than willing to take up some of these, as you say, profound existential and intellectual questions that are raised even in a story like Hunger Games?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, kids these days are forced with more and more questions, and reality around them seems to be, you know, kind of impinging and being shoved down their throat at a younger and younger age every year. You know, what people know in sixth grade in terms of their exposure to the outside world and the culture is far different than it was when I was even in sixth grade. And, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. So part of that is, I think, also the appeal here in these books is that it in a way, it helps children and young adults in particular to wrestle with these questions. And obviously in a very illustrative, rather stark, very violent ways at times, the books help to do that. So, you know, it's not so much that Collins is encouraging us to go and start our own Hunger Games as she is warning against what happens in a society where this becomes reality and what, you know, what reality can become given the kind of world we live in.
Does the trilogy, in some sense, as far as you can tell, also ride the wave of some political cynicism that is kind of marks the way we think today as Americans?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a fair amount of you know, political, we'll just call it political commentary, perhaps. You know, and that's not a left or right issue or any side of the aisle. I think just in general, there's political skepticism and cynicism, and perhaps a healthy, you know, healthy paranoia about what's going on in the world of politics around us.
I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, Sam, that, you know, I'm a pretty attentive father, but I had no idea that my son had read all three of these books, and he'd read them years before I'd even heard them. And my wife was a bit surprised, too. But talk to that parent who says, okay, my kids come to that age where in school Scholastic is offering the books and Hunger Games is on the list and they want to read it. What do you say to that parent?
Yeah, I mean, Scholastic comes out with books like this regularly, and they kind of just slip in with the book order forms that come home, and most people probably don't even, yeah, either think or notice. And I think one of the best things that a parent can do is obviously to talk with the children, ask them what they're reading, even read along with them, you know, whether it's separately and then they talk about it later, or, I mean, I would highly encourage reading it together with a young child or a young adult and enjoying that time together. It gives, especially with a book like this, a great opportunity for discussion. There's a lot of different themes, both good things that are going on in the book and things that Christians can wrestle and struggle with and question in the books as well. And those are great opportunities to teach, to reinforce the catechism, to talk about the scriptures, and to talk about really, you know, the questions that aren't answered in the book are finally and ultimately answered in Christ. You know, what happens in a world that's gone wrong? What happens with death and war and poverty? What do we do with the humanity of these? Ultimately, any kind of hero or heroine in a story is not going to be able to resolve those. They will finally be resolved in the cross of Christ and in his work on Good Friday for us.
Pastor Sam Schultheis is associate pastor at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Huntington Beach, California. He's author of a recent blog post titled, Can a Christian Watcher Read Hunger Games? You can read this article at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Sam, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here, Todd. Blessings on the rest of your Lenten season.
The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March is a children's book called My First Hymnal. It's one of those resources that I think every parent wish they would have before it came out. And what we did at our congregation, I think I've mentioned this, was buy a bunch of them as a congregation and make sure that the parents of small children had a copy of My First Hymnal. It's a great idea. And I'm sure the Concordia Publishing House would appreciate a call from you as you order My First Hymnal, The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for March. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. It's a real-life hymnal, but it's for kids. So it has everything the adult hymnal would have in it, but pared down for children without losing any of the Christ-centered and cross-focused content. My First Hymnal from Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. In hour two of Issues, Etc., we're going to spend a few minutes with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse talking about last Friday's Stand Up for Religious Freedom rallies. They were held all over the country. She spoke at one out on the West Coast, and we'll also get her thoughts on a new survey that seems to be saying, well, as previous surveys say, that cohabitation was a pretty good indicator, before marriage, was a pretty good indicator of a short life for that marriage. Higher risk of divorce. Now the numbers are indicating that cohabitation, especially if engaged, does not necessarily have a correlation with later divorce. We'll see what she thinks about all of that. And then we'll talk some of the words from the Lord's Prayer, the first petition, Hallowed Be Thy Name, with Pastor Bill Swirla. Hour two of Issues, Etc., next, stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.